contact Dennis at DennisJBernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
The KABU Community Radio Artists in Residence Program application period is open. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KABU mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The Artists in Residence Program is open to artists of all disciplines whose project proposals include sound as a major component. Applications for the KABU 2017 Artists in Residence are due Friday, April 7th. More information can be found at kabu.fm/kabuair2017.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively run, new and used bike sales and service shop with two locations on Southeast Ankeny near KABU. Open 7 days a week for your bicycle commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop.
I run around town, around, round, around with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around, round, around, round the town with the pedal to the metal, the pedal to whatever. I run around town, around.
Hi, you've just tuned into the KABU Bike Show, coming to you from the KABU Studios in Southeast Portland, Oregon. I'm Terry Campbell here with fellow co-host Tori Bortman. Hi, Tori.
Hi, Terry.
How's your day going?
Lovely.
Excellent, excellent. Podcasting is a term that has become more common when talking with friends and family about music and entertainment media. According to Wikipedia, first known as autoblogging, the roots of podcasting date back to the 1980s. With the advent of broadband internet and portable digital audio player devices, such as the iPod. I'm so glad they came up with the iPod. That was a long device name. Podcasting began to catch hold in 2004 and is even more popular today. Podcasting is akin to a grassroots radio revolution where podcasters, as the hosts are called, can develop shows on topics that interest them and a select group of the populace. With a low cost to get the right equipment, podcasting offers access to voices that may not be heard through traditional media channels, and it starts to connect networks of listeners who have a common interest. Again, according to Wikipedia, today there are more than 115,000 English-speaking podcasts available on the internet and dozens of websites available for distribution at little or no cost to both the producer or the listener. Those podcasts cover a wide variety of topics in the world of media, from cooking to gardening to women who live in military families to the fishing reports of Florida to Math Dude and, of course, our realm, cycling. Even in the realm of cycling, shows cover a wide variety of topics such as bike mechanics, bike racing, bike culture, bike adventure, and more. Today, we are happy to host a couple of guest from different podcasts here in Portland, Oregon. We have Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson from the We Got to Hang Out podcast. And we have Aaron Flores and Brock Dittis from the Sprocket podcast. Thanks for joining.
The We Got to Hang Out podcast is Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson, two friends who love to ride bikes and, well, hang out. They have spent the better part of a decade riding, racing, adventuring, and working in the bike industry. Along the way, they've come to realize that cycling's biggest rewards haven't come from the race results, but from the relationships they've built and the experiences they've shared. Their podcast started as an incentive to hang out and interview friends, cyclists, bike racers, and whoever else strikes their fancy. Fueled on enthusiasm and moderate whiskey consumption, they record and produce their podcast from Annalisa's living room and are learning as they go. Their focus is primarily cycling, but they dream of being able to interview other heroes, like literally any member of Sleater-Kinney, if you're out there. welcome today to the show, Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We're excited.
Cool. Fresh off their spot on KPTV's More Good Day Oregon, the Sprocket podcast is co-hosted by Aaron Flores and Brock Dittis. The Sprocket simplifies the concept of the good life in Portland, Oregon by riding bicycles, using public transit, having adventures, and finding ways to improve on tacit assumptions. They serve up snark and heart in equal portion with a core of sincerity. The Sprocket has been producing weekly podcasts since November 2010. Their listeners are local, national, and global, and often write in with perspectives to share. Brock and Aaron are both bicycle commuters, bicycle tourists, and deep thinkers. But according to Brock, Aaron is a better bike maintenance than Brock does. And according to Aaron, Brock is a better cycle tourer than Aaron is. So thanks for coming today, guys, all four of you, and joining this conversation around podcasting and cycling. I would just like to ask a question about the difference between traditional radio and media and podcasting, and what you guys see as the differences and benefits and detractors of either one. So
I'll let you guys go because you guys have been in business for a while.
Yeah.
So, Brock Titus, you want to answer that?
Absolutely. I think podcasting is kind of like the Netflix of radio, where you can choose whatever you want to hear at any point. You can download it. It's on demand. And there's so much stuff out there, you're never going to get through all of it.
I think it's less stressful than radio. Radio's live, and podcasts, you can always go back and edit because there are multiple times during interviews or like just our banter where we're like, ooh, definitely cut
that out.
Never mind
on that.
Exactly.
And the barrier to entry with podcasting is so much lower. Like, we just decided we wanted to do it, and we are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And do you feel like it offers different voices? I mean, maybe some that may want to be out there, but I mean, it does offer a sort of more democratized voice on the air.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main differences between podcasting and traditional media is I'm able to podcast. They let me do this.
Right.
They keep letting me do this.
And you're not a professional media person, right, Aaron Flores?
Yeah, I am very unprofessional.
And Aaron Flores, I mean, when you say they, it's just you. It's just you letting you do
that. You
know,
they, them.
Yeah.
The
but you are they,
them. Sure, sure.
I'm also they, and I let you keep doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what got Brock and Aaron into podcasting? What was some of the things that got you guys curious about it? And how did you guys start the Sprocket?
It was 2010. A friend of mine I was living with at the time saw me sitting around not doing much. And Brandon Rhodes, thank you. He said, hey, you should make something. And so we sat down in his room with a bunch of Radio Shack equipment and made a couple of shows, put them up, and said, hey, this is fun. Let's keep on doing it. So Brandon and I were together for the first 2 years, and then Aaron stepped in when Brandon lost his schedule. So
whose idea was it then? I mean, you could have made dinner. He said, make something. You could have made anything. Why a podcast?
Well, Brandon had the insight. You like interviewing people. You've done it even as a kid.
I like conversations.
Yeah. You strike up a conversation with just about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a podcasting going on back in that day, Brock, that you were listening to, or Aaron? I mean,
not as much. There were radio shows that inspired me. I was a big fan of the Rick Emerson Show and Fun Employment Radio, which is still making podcasts today. They're great at what they do. And I enjoyed the casual nature of the conversations, and it was stuff that people weren't really talking about in other places.
Right, right.
Yeah, for me, it was mostly just an avenue to listen to more music.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like Tiny Desk concerts.
Oh, right.
All Songs Considered, which I guess is just terrestrial radio put on the internet.
What about Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson? What inspired you to start?
What inspired us? We spent a lot of time talking about podcasts while we were riding bikes together, and I think we both tend to gravitate towards a lot of podcasts we find funny. And so I think we really wanted to bring like a sense of humor and riding bikes and hanging out together.
Yeah, so it's just basically a great excuse to hang out with each other and then also people we want to interview. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Great. It's a good avenue for contacting your heroes and see if they want to talk with you.
That's our goal.
You guys have a couple of sweet ones already under your belt.
Thank you.
So it's good. Good success so far. I've heard some things around town about Stream PDX. Brock and Aaron, do you guys want to explain to me and everybody else what Stream PDX is?
Yeah, Stream PDX is a brand new project with a few friends and us. It's a community audio studio in a vintage Airstream trailer where people can record content for their own, either their podcasts or their other audio projects. And we're hosted by Open Signal, which used to be Portland Community Media. they do video and we do audio, and so the match was made in somewhere good.
Good. Is that so? That's where your studio is currently?
It is, yeah. Okay. And memberships are available at streampdx.com if people are interested in more about that.
We're going to look that up.
Yeah, we currently do our podcast out of my living room. Mm. So we like have to turn off the heat and do all, like, we have to like set it up.
We had a couple times when like Annalise has a cat and a dog and they get unruly.
I know, so we're going to check out this Airstream.
So when we asked earlier, what are the differences between live radio and podcasting, there are no cats or dogs.
Right.
Yeah, there's no animals or babies or birds hitting windows or I don't know what could happen.
People and no whiskey. Toilet. I don't see any whiskey around here.
No. Yeah.
After.
Wow. Also, podcasting, we used to record in my living room, and it was in a one-bedroom apartment, so I had to kick my wife out of the house, and she would go to the library while we did her show, and then she'd come back later. So we don't have to do that anymore.
Where do you kick your significant others out to?
My significant other is an integral part of the audio part, so he stays around.
Fair
for
enough.
Sure.
He's usually like locked in the TV room upstairs to be quiet while we're recording.
And then I'm like, Corey!
Help. And my husband's not involved directly, but is a listener.
He's baking at home.
Yeah, he made like a delicious cookie thing tonight, so I have that to look forward to.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Wait, and you didn't bring it with
it's
you?
It's happening currently.
Yeah. Delicious cookie.
I'm pretty excited. Pavlova? I don't know.
So both of your podcasts focus on cycling, and I guess I'd be curious to know, and I think our listeners would like to know, what are your first memories as an adult that made you want to do a show about cycling? I mean, I think we understand why you want a podcast, but why about bikes? Why not about cooking cookies or...
I don't cook. I pretty much just like ride bikes and hang out with my friends and husband and cat and dog. So that's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
And Abby. Yeah.
I mean, me too. I love riding bikes. And they consume so much of my life anyways. It's what I want to talk about.
Great.
Well, one thing I was really impressed with listening to your podcast was that you guys cover things from an angle that I really appreciate, meaning when I don't really follow racing, like not real racing. I know who Katie Compton is when you say, and I'm like really excited to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know everything Katie Compton does and you guys have such a casual way of talking to people and kind of drawing them out. But also you can kind of geek out with them about like nutrition and training and stuff that like, I don't want to watch my nutrition that much or train that much. But it's cool that you guys know all about that and can ask the right questions, because I wouldn't even know what to ask.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this, it doesn't get too geeked out because it's casual, but it's asked from a level of expertise and knowledge that you guys both bring to it that's really just awesome, and I really like listening to.
I think that's a great way to summarize our hope.
Yeah. We try to kind of humanize the athlete almost. Part of why we like bikes is not really the bikes itself, but the relationships we form with others when we go out for our 3-hour rides, you know, and the donut stops, whatever. And
the flat tires.
Yeah.
You learn a lot about people.
Yeah. And we're just like total goofballs. Like, I think, you know, nowadays people are pretty serious and we try to just laugh a lot more.
Right.
Especially this year.
Yeah, I think the podcast like also has been a great opportunity for us to make fun of ourselves. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's super fun for me.
Aaron Flores, Brock Dittus, can you say anything about making fun of yourselves on your podcast?
Yeah, that's my job. I mean, yeah, mostly when I come into the studio, I do my best to make our guests look good, and if that means making a fool out of myself, then so be it.
Our job is contrast.
Sometimes that just comes naturally anyway. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I enjoy finding out what people have to say, and it's fun to have someone who is an expert on something that I'm not. And it's a great excuse to meet somebody who really, otherwise I'd just be like, I have all your albums. And, you know, I do, but that's not a good thing to say. So get in
there.
But
now you can say, instead of I have all your albums, you can say, I have a podcast. Do you want to be on it?
Yeah. Can you bring me all your albums?
Can we talk about all your albums on our podcast?
Yeah, I like both of your shows because you guys both do very informal introductions about what you might have done over the past weekend, and it kind of, I don't know, it's a very similar format, and then you kind of go into an interview, and it just kind of brings the listener into the living room or the Airstream, yeah, so to speak, before getting into the meat of the content. So,
do either of you think about that, about the fact that, Brack and Aaron, you've been doing it much longer, but that people have gotten to know you as your own personalities with these introductions that are a little bit informal about who you are. It's not just, I mean, at a certain point, it is about who you're interviewing, but people are coming back to hear you doing the interviewing. How has that been for you to kind of go from being like, oh, we're just Brock and Aaron, to we're the Sprocket podcast
celebrities?
Well, I think one of the things that I've liked about certain shows, again, Fun Employment Radio, which I love, or other shows that are like The Nerdist does a great job of this, Mark Maron does a great job of this, being people, yeah, who you come for the guest, but you're there because you like the person that's doing the interview. And that's something that draws me in. Like, I don't really like the sterile type of, like, you know, all apologies and love to NPR, but NPR has a style, and everybody knows what that style is. And I think, for me, I like something that's personable, and the person asking the question should have a personality.
Well, and I think what draws a lot of people in, and then also sort of what keeps us going, is we're not putting on a persona.
Right.
So to speak. You know, we don't have Brock and Aaron of the Sprocket as an alter ego of Brock and Aaron, you know, outside of the studio.
This is us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if I could even manage that, in all honesty. A lot has already crossed over between people who have, who I've met from podcasting, and people who I now, like, hang out with, either who have come up to me and said, like, oh, I recognize your voice, or, you know, oh, I was listening to this and I know who you are. It would be really tough to manage if, like, I met someone here in Portland, and, you know, they knew me via the Sprocket, but then, like, now I have this sort of, well, okay, that's not me, that was just a character I play or something. And it would just be really tough. I don't think it would make podcasting genuine, mm-hmm, enough.
How about you guys are just starting your journey of podcasting?
I mean, this is us.
Yeah.
Well, can I get your autograph?
Was that an intentional choice you made, though?
I don't think it was a choice. I think it was just obvious to both of us that we were going to go on the show, be ourselves. And, I mean, the name kind of explains a good part of it. Like, we literally just wanted to hang out and see where it took us. And I think so far we've been pretty genuine to that and are really...
I think,
like,
we're both terrible
it.
Actors. So
yeah, yeah, right. There's that.
Yeah. We might have a little whiskey, so...
Then you really are just hanging out.
Right. Seriously. Yeah.
But it's been super fun. Like, I know we both sort of go through the week and we collect these moments that, like I want to talk about this. This is funny. Like, it's just helped me see my own life sometimes through a different lens.
Like, we won't talk about stuff during the week that we want to talk about on the podcast, so that it's like we're hearing it for the first time.
Yeah.
Because we feel like those reactions are so genuine and funny to each other.
So do you find yourself actually, like, saving things?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah. Taking, like, notes.
This is why Brock and me don't hang out anymore.
That's true.
Just one day a week.
One hour on Monday, and that's it.
Even though you work at the same place, right?
That's funny. We see each other all the time. We just go our separate ways.
Morning, Frank. Morning, Ralph.
Like, no eye contact all week.
We haven't figured that out. We'll start to say things and then be like, save it.
Yeah, we'll just see. Yeah, totally.
So that might have been maybe a little stretch of the truth after all that talk about being genuine.
I also do find, though, that in some ways, like, I used to say save it for the show, and now I don't really mind talking about something before, because oftentimes you kind of do that, like it's almost like a pre-interview or something. You kind of figure out what you're going to talk about, then you can circle back to it in different ways, and you fill in the gaps you needed to know, and then you can talk about it more and more expansively after. So it depends on your style, I guess. We talk at work.
We have fun.
Yeah.
We have fun here.
So shifting gears from podcasting specifically and more to cycling in our beloved city of Portland, how safe do you guys feel riding on the roads in Portland? And I'll leave it at that.
I mean, I'm a super like defensive rider for sure. But I feel relatively safe. I've been in other cities where I feel definitely less safe. But I think always like, just like anticipating that no one sees you and just being a little defensive. I definitely get frustrated or even like going up Skyline and I don't like the middle finger. I don't like, or getting the middle finger or like honking at, like it frustrates me. But there are worse cities for sure.
Yeah. I feel more comfortable on my bike than I do in a car still. So
that's good.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we are here today on the KBOO Bike Show with a couple podcasters who do cycling podcasts in Portland, Oregon. It's Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson from the We Got to Hang Out podcast, and Aaron Flores and Brock Dittus from the Sprocket podcast. How about you guys? How do you feel about safety and bicycling in Portland?
You've got something to say about that. I was just going to say, as a white male, I feel fine, but that's not everybody. And I think there is something to be said for, I don't know, like I've always thought about it as like, did I feel safe or was I safe? And what's the difference between those? But feeling safe is also very important. So there are many places where I ride that I wouldn't recommend everybody ride. And so in that sense, like every morning for my commute to work, I ride down MLK Boulevard, which is one of our biggest streets here.
You do not.
But I ride it at like 5:45 in the morning. And there's nobody there.
Okay.
And I'm
okay.
Wearing a reflective vest and a helmet, and I feel okay about it. But not everybody should do that because it's not the right choice for everybody. But
I would never ever ride on MLK. But I'm never also on my bike at 5:45.
I mean,
in the morning,
I'll do it during the day just to be defiant.
No.
Yes. I mean, not as a regular practice or anything. Just, oh well, I happen to be here, I guess I'll ride it. I don't know, like this, I think the city's pretty safe as far as cycling and cycling infrastructure. When I was in Mexico City, I was really surprised at how safe I felt as a pedestrian, regardless of how unsafe I perceived traffic to be. And there's something to be said about a little bit too much reliance that drivers have on safety features, either in their car or on the road. And, you know, that could be maybe interpreted as a bit controversial. But in the meantime, I've had a lot of also not pleasant interactions with drivers. And some of it is, I don't want to say I bring it onto myself, but some of it is like,
well, if you're riding down MLK,
I ride where I just happen to find myself. Some of it is like, I also don't, look like your average Portland cyclist. Some of it is I don't like getting honked at, and I have a very visceral reaction to it. And, do I feel safe most times? Am I safe? For the most part, yeah.
Safe-ish?
Yeah.
But it sounds like when you're not safe, it's you not being safe, not that you necessarily don't feel safe.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of it yes, some of it no. I mean, I think we have a lot of concentration, especially when we are in cars, of getting from point A to point B as fast as possible. And there is something about brakes that we just fear too much. And it's like, I think I heard somebody or read somebody a tweet, like, hell hath no fury as a driver having to put on their brakes,
Yeah.
And it's,
or a turn signal.
Yeah.
But cyclists don't use turn signals. Do you guys use turn signals?
I try to.
Yeah.
I would say at least 30% of the time.
See, that's what I'm saying. I love signaling. I love, because Oregon made
it.
If you're listening from somewhere else, Oregon made it so that you can just point what direction you're going.
Yeah.
And there's something about it.
That's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be.
Unambiguous.
Everywhere.
None of this, like, right angle.
But then, my argument, Aaron, is that it's so easy to do. Why only 30% of the time?
It all depends on whether it's, I perceive it's necessary. And, like, these are just my own opinions, you know, not necessarily gospel. But, you know, if I'm riding in the middle of the night, or they're very early,
if there's
in the
no
morning,
one to signal to,
yeah, why bother?
Do you ride 70% of the night time in the middle of the night?
70% of the time in the very early morning.
Oh, okay, you're out very early.
Yes.
How about you guys, Annalisa and?
Well, I commute, and my commute is pretty straightforward. So not a lot of signaling, but I always do it. I think the only time I don't signal is if it's like odd hours of time and I know that I'm the only person on the road where I am, or if conditions are a little hairy and I just would rather keep my hands on the bars.
That's actually law.
I know.
You should keep your hands on the bars if conditions are
so
hairy.
So I do it sometimes.
That's a good point. I try to use hand signals. The time I didn't, my husband got real upset with me for like not pointing it out.
And so, I think both of us have ridden in enough road ride group settings enough to really understand the importance of like hand signals.
Oh, yeah, especially in a group ride setting, definitely. Yeah. Pointing things out, turning right, left, yeah. Letting people know what's coming up the road for sure.
Yeah.
I signal every time, no matter if someone's there or not.
Wild.
That's not hyperbole.
I was going to say.
Are we
trying to be the knight in shining armor?
No, the whole, like, you know, if a tree falls in the forest,
right.
If there is, if there's no one to see Brock signaling, he still sees
it. I believe it. I definitely believe it.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah, no wonder you teach classes on safety.
I do.
So what, let me throw one more out at you about cycling around Portland. How's the future? The future from the people you guys talk to about riding around Portland and riding in northwestern Oregon, is the future bright as far as safe riding and more people having access to bikes and safe places to go?
Because our, you know, Portland's population is about to increase another, I think, by another third in the next 10 or 15 years. What do you think?
Is this where we also pivot about peak oil and?
No, you don't have to. You
bring back critical mass. You want us to bring back critical mass?
I mean, whether there's oil or not, we're still gonna. Our population's gonna be a lot more dense. Sure.
But there's some real exciting stuff going on too with different trails, like pedestrian and biking trails being extended or built. And so, any ideas or thoughts on like where things are going and just your general feeling? Like, are you optimistic?
My general feel, just from the people that we've talked to over the years, is Portland has been resting on its laurels since the critical mass days. And in the past year, maybe 2 years, we're finally waking up to that fact. I would say I'm cautiously optimistic about Portland cycling.
I agree. I think that Portland has been resting on its laurels, and certainly I'm also a mountain biker as well as a road rider, and Portland leaves a lot to be desired for people that want to ride mountain bikes within the city limits. So I guess I'm going to insert a plug for people that are in the city of Portland to comment on the off-road cycling master plan interactive map that the city just released. It's really important, and it's not just mountain biking. It's riding your bike off-road, so that could mean a gravel path, could mean some kind of pedestrian path. It's not just mountain biking, so it's super important.
Could be a bike park for your kids.
Yeah.
One of the things I've also talked up whenever I talk to people who aren't from Portland is that the driver culture, by and large, people in automobiles are pretty respectful of people on bikes, like way more than other places I've been on a bike in other cities. But that is also changing as more people move here from other places. And so I think there's a little onus for, if you're a driver and you know the drivers, you remind them to be nice to everybody, no matter what mode of transport they're taking. And if you're a cyclist, if you feel comfortable asserting yourself to assert your rights on the road, to make sure that the respect that exists on Portland's roads is something that continues to exist here.
I think that, along those lines, the respect needs to go both ways, though. Like, I really do think, you know, often see some cyclists being with behavior that you know, isn't very respectful, and then vice versa with the driver. So I think we all need to be on our best behavior.
Those are some very, very stout words, I think. Yeah. It's everyone just kind of a little bit more respect and best behavior, I think.
You're listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on 90.7 FM in Portland, on the web at kboo.fm. Please stay with us for the second half of our show when we continue talking with Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson, Brock Dittus, and Aaron Flores, all amazing podcasters in the Portland area. Don't touch that dial.
Welcome back to the KBOO Bike Show. We're here talking with cycle podcasters from the city of Portland, Oregon, Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson from the We Got to Hang Out podcast. Thanks for sticking around for the second half of the show.
Yeah, we wouldn't miss it.
And Brock Dittus and Aaron Flores from the Sprocket podcast. We just left off talking about kind of bike safety in the city of Portland and the future and what these esteemed podcasters feel like the future of cycling in Portland has in store for all of us. So I think we wanted to switch back. Maybe Tori had a question to kind of go back a little bit about more details about how podcasting got started and
well, less how it got started and more I want to know the nitty-gritty of when you did get started, because I think there's a lot of people out there who aspire to podcast. What was that like to actually make the jump from like, hey, we have this idea, to we are making this recording and figuring out how to get it on iTunes and all that? Like, I don't even know how that happens. How does that happen?
Step one is just recording yourself speaking. So finding how to get, like I said before, our first gear was just Radio Shack mics. It was like really bad quality.
What were you recording into?
A computer, a laptop.
Okay.
Yeah. Which, by the way, laptops can fall apart. They can fry. They can go out. And so you can lose recordings that way too. We've done it all, I think, at this point. Which is why you have redundancies. You record multiple times with many machines, that sort of thing, just to make sure that if you have, in fact, captured gold, that it doesn't go away. And everything, of course, that we produce.
It's all gold. Everything.
But learning how to work with audio and just kind of figuring out how to make that sound good, I think the biggest problem a lot of people have, like, I won't name any names, but some shows have started with like an iPhone in the middle of the table, and you can do that, but if it's like five people yelling about, you know, like comic books or something in a room with no sound insulation, that doesn't sound very good. And so finding a way to make whatever you have work for you, make sure you get the right sound quality. One of the things that it was really important for me to learn was how to make the noise how to make the voice levels equalize. So finding out the stuff about compression and kind of how to make, you know, if one person's voice is quiet, one person's voice is louder, how to kind of even those out, and then how to maximize the volume on the audio file completely so that everyone can hear as well as they can, even if they're working in a metal shop.
And how long did that process take you?
Still learning.
Annalisa.
I would say, like, don't let Brock's knowledge intimidate you. Like, go with the punk rock ethic. Like, go with what you've got. You know, don't let quality be your only goal. Well, let it be a goal.
Let it be a goal, but maybe not your guide. Like, don't let it stop you.
Somebody's got to keep Radio Shack in business.
We started on the quality of equipment that we started on, and over the years, you know, replaced, revamped, you know, refitted. But
and there's no better teacher than experience.
Exactly, exactly.
It's so, not, but you have to actually do it to get the experience. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it's not about getting, and you could even parallel that with cycling. It's not about getting the right equipment first. It's just about going out and doing it.
Yeah, good analogy, yeah. Man. That was good.
Deep thinkers. Right, they claim they were, right, and they are deep thinkers.
I didn't even rehearse that.
Yeah, so good.
Just to add to that too, like, don't let that scare you off either, because I think everybody should have their voice out there. And definitely, as tricky as the back end can be on getting it all online and whatnot, you can make a podcast with an iPhone or with a Samsung or whatever you've got.
And you guys are fairly new to podcasting. You just started.
We're so new.
We're like not even 2 months in.
Yeah.
And really, it was intimidating.
What was
at first.
Yeah, what, how did you get over that gap?
Well, I think we started by just recording an intro. And that 2 minute intro took us an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But it really, like, not only did it teach us about the editing end of it and what to do with the file once we'd created it, but it just got us a little bit more comfortable with talking into a microphone, and
which
that was the first barrier.
Which is, granted, it's weird.
It's weird. Yeah, it's
is
totally
it weird,
weird
for you guys?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's weird. Because it insinuates people are listening, and then you start
like
thinking about talking. Yeah.
We were super awkward at first, and we're still awkward. But
that's kind of
but
natural.
Now it's charming.
Yeah. Thank you, Tori. Yeah. So basically, my husband bought me a microphone for my birthday, and that kind of like started the whole process.
Which one did you get?
Audio Technica.
Ooh.
I think it's good. I'm sure your audio quality is much better with everything that you've said and your experience. I think we do pretty well, though, for being like a month in. And, you know, there's been, we botched an entire interview with a friend because the mic wasn't picking up. It was just the computer. And that was really sad and disappointing, but good thing it was a friend and he'll come back on. But it's been a big learning, you know, process. But it's been really fun. I'm a total geek with that stuff, and it's nice to have Corey's support, and Abby is there for moral support in the editing part.
Annalisa totally owns the technical end of it for us.
Okay. Yeah, so it's been super
blissfully
fun.
Blissfully ignorant.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because here at KABU, I'm somewhat blissfully ignorant as well. We have all this excellent equipment and engineers that do the magic for us on live radio. One thing I'm really curious about, if you've interviewed people who are not in the room with you, how do you, what's the best way that you found to interview people? Do you do it through the phone? Do you Skype? What have you learned? Brock, you look
my
like you're
preferred,
ready to...
Yeah, my preferred method is to have them hook up some sort of recording device on their end. So if you're on the phone or if you're on Skype or whatever, if they have their own iPhone in front of them, that they, if they're not using it, I guess, to record their own voice, and then you can sync those two files together later. I know there's a bunch of great software tools that will let you do like a Skype conference or something where it records everyone's tracks individually. You can adjust those later on as you like. I still prefer in the room with the other person live. I think, I mean, you know, and it's no shade thrown on people who do remote shows, because sometimes the only way to talk to somebody that's interesting is by, you know, remote. But I really appreciate the energy of somebody else being right across the table from you.
We appreciate that as well, but, you know, we couldn't go to Colorado a couple weeks ago. But that's a goal. Is to like get a sweet van or something and
we're
travel.
Working on that.
Yeah,
more to come.
We're gonna go to like I think Sea Otter, like and interview some
there
folks and have some fun with it. But yeah, we just.
So how did you handle the Katie Compton interview?
Well, you listen to it? You
yes.
said how did we handle it through the iPhone? I mean, we have like a mixer and things, and you know,
I you did it through
the
okay.
audio out from your from
yeah.
your own phone.
It sounded pretty good.
It actually, that's why I asked because it was
it comes out all right.
It was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
but
cool.
I think you've also gotten smart pretty early about not having the other like turning the heat off and all those other things that you have to do to keep those other noises so that your original where you are at least home base. Sounds really good too.
Technology, man. Like, it makes us sound good. I don't know. There's like, you know, match loudness. There's like, you know, noise reduction. There's all sorts of cool stuff that makes us sound good and like we know what we're doing.
The magic of technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good interlude bringing up Katie Compton. She happens to be a 13-time U.S. cyclocross national champion. So it's actually a question that, and we got to hang out, interviewed her a couple weeks ago. So I have a question about cyclocross for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of goes like this. I'm kind of curious to know, it's a passion of mine as well, and I'm curious to know, it's a sport that struggles to find equal pay for men and women at the highest levels. And I'm kind of curious to know your insights due to the fact that you both race, I think, still. Mm-hmm. And you've raced at a pretty high level. And just kind of curious to know your insights on that
like
issue.
Equality.
Pay equality.
Pay equality.
Yeah.
Definitely a struggle. I think it's getting better. There's a lot of arguments. It's not just cross, it's road.
Yeah.
I mean, it's life, it's work, it's, you know,
sure,
it's,
sure.
It's everywhere.
It permeates everything,
even.
Right.
Yeah.
I think some kind of like salary requirements would go a long way, because there's so many women that they race as professional cyclocross racers or any other kind of bike racers, and they have side jobs to make ends meet, because you just don't make enough money.
Right. Like, even some of the best in Europe are actually like nurses during the weekday, which sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and some of them like don't actually make a salary like at all.
Right.
You know, it's like your payout from the races. And then, in Europe, I think domestically here, like, it's definitely improving, but you talk to the gals that go overseas, and I mean, they're kind of not treated the best. I know, like, I hear from Mark and Katie, like, how they have to, like, park much further away from, you know, the race venue. And
and they still stay in host housing and things like that, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Not sponsored housing. I think they enjoy it at this point, too, because they have a network of people that they work with, but I don't think you would see Jeremy Powers staying in host housing.
Right.
I'm
unless
sort of
I was living there, and then
but
I might invite him to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's progress being made, but it feels like it's not being made quickly enough.
Sure. Sure.
But I'm glad there is progress.
Yeah, there's some great race promoters even locally that do have equal payouts for men and women, so I think we can all support those races on a local level.
Mm-hmm.
And then put pressure on the companies that you love to support women that are racing bikes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's good steps. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask, if a woman wins a pro race, do they get podium dudes?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I think no.
I haven't.
No. Was it like Gila?
Podium dude.
Okay.
I think it was at Tour of Gila. Maybe they had a podium dude like one time. And then one of the riders did like the Sagan, like pinch the butt of the dude.
What?
It was great.
I'm around if anybody needs me. I'll stand there and look good.
So, Brock and Aaron, what kind of big stories are you guys following in 2017? What's coming down the pike for the Sprocket?
What's coming up on the podcast? Something to look forward to?
Well, we always book our interviews out a couple months in advance. We got some cool voices coming out, but we keep that a secret. So that's code for I don't remember right now.
Right.
Also, there are
usually don't know until like the morning of.
And you look at each other and say, "Who are we talking to again?"
Oh crap! I got to do some research.
And we have someone lined up. It's just we forget who until then. But no, the local events coming up. Those are the ones that we promote. We always do a calendar segment, and
nice.
The Lads 500, which is it's springtime. Let's do something stupid. Our friend DBR's hosting this 500 laps around the Lad Circle, which is like a quarter of a mile or less.
For those
well, not 500 laps is not a quarter of a mile.
Each lap is a quarter.
It's a very small course. Yeah.
For those of you listening who aren't familiar with Portland, it is essentially a very large roundabout with a small garden area in the middle, and they are doing 500 laps around that roundabout.
As a relay, you can opt to do it on your own. You will have to switch your bikes.
I'm doing it.
Yes. But it's mostly as a relay. It's just a great time because there's that circle in the middle, you know, it's just a park. And so everyone's hanging out and, you know, talking with each other. You get to meet all sorts of different people that
sitting in the shade and the picnic blankets and
yeah.
And grill bikes.
Do the grill bikes actually make laps?
Yes, and you get
For those of you listening who don't know what a grill bike is, that Annalisa Fish is making a face like, what is this? And if you haven't experienced it, it is a bike that has a working grill attached to the back of it so that you so that you can cook while you're cycling.
We need to cook while we're cycling. Obviously.
We need to eat while we're cycling.
After a few laps around the circle, you need a burger hand up.
Exactly.
I thought they were calling him a hand down.
When is this?
Hand down, right? I think that's Iris' term.
For Annalisa and our listeners, when is this?
This would be April 15th.
Tax day.
Not tax day.
No, that's right. Not tax day. But yeah, that and the Steens Bazama 1000, which it's the local dot watching thing. A bunch of folks are going to go out and do a long distance bike packing challenge. Is it a race? I'm not sure if it's a race. People are going to go out. They're going to try and do it fast. So it's 1,000 miles through eastern Oregon and southern Oregon, and it's pretty awesome. This is the second year people are going out. So we're going to follow that as well. But
I'm going to go out and watch some dots.
Yeah. Are there any other things you were following this year or anything you're interested in that we haven't talked about yet?
Not that I can bring up right off the top of my head.
All right.
Top secret stuff, then. Yes, really right. Top secret.
Stay tuned.
Well, I guess there's the bike tour in Hawaii, but that's not like a promoting.
But that's something you're excited about.
Me and my lady are going to do just some small trips on Bromptons in Oahu.
Oh, that sounds... Nice. Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. I want to
fit in your folding bike case.
Yeah. It's really amorphous at this point in time. We leave Tuesday and with bikes in hand, and we'll just sort of make it up.
Are you doing any recording while you're on the island?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, that's exciting. Yes. Then that is something to really look forward to for your next podcast.
Well, we went, it's my brother's wedding, and so we had to go regardless. So
if you have to go to Hawaii,
trying to make the best of this horrible situation of having to go to a tropical island in the spring, you know, and miss all this
when it's been raining here nonstop for 200
right.
days.
Right.
Cool.
How about you guys? What are your big plans for either the podcast or yourselves?
We mentioned Seattle briefly, and I think we both got
and
some
the
ideas.
Van.
And the
van.
We've got some ideas we're trying to
We might ride
bring
partway.
To fruition. Yeah.
And yeah, I got some like portable equipment. I'm headed to LA in a couple weeks.
What's Sea Otter?
There's bike races. So there's like road racing, mountain bike racing. There's even a cyclocross race, which is pretty insane for this time of year because that doesn't start until the fall. And then it's also become kind of an alternative to Interbike for a lot of companies.
The Bike Expo.
There's a lot of new product releases that happen.
A lot of new product
a lot of athletes
releases.
There.
And
yeah.
what's different about it from other bike expos is most bike expos is just industry only. Sea Otter is completely open to the public so that anyone can come. Anyone can race any of those races. Mm-hmm. And I think it just started out once upon a time way back when as one mountain bike race. And it just kind of kept growing because it was put on so well that people kept wanting to come.
And it's in Monterey, that's nice.
It's in
too.
Monterey, so yeah.
So yeah, now we really have to go though because we signed up. I'm headed to LA in a couple weeks to do some bike fits at Golden Saddle Cyclery. And I'm going to interview the owners there for the podcast. Abby's staying home though, which I'm really sad about.
Can't do everything.
It will probably be totally awful because Abby's not there.
Well, Abby can
maybe I'll
call
be the
in.
One calling in.
Yeah.
Right. Oh yeah.
I'll miss you. We'll have to hang out.
She'll give you the weather report from Portland.
Yeah.
I'll send her selfies.
That's
like I do.
Yeah. Right. What about for the show? Do you have any big guests lined up?
Next week's guest is...
We don't know yet.
Are we keeping it secret?
Oh, the one we're releasing.
Yeah. Our next guest is a New York City chef. Kind of a celebrity cycling chef, Seamus Mullen. He does a lot for hunger charity rides for kids and stuff. So it's pretty cool. Beyond that,
we don't know who we're interviewing next week.
We're not booked like months out, man.
We've got a long list of people we want to talk to, but it's not even written down.
I mean, that's basically what we have as far as booking. We have a long list of people we want to talk to. It's just in a calendar form.
Oh. Have you talked to them? Booked them? Do they know about it?
While we're talking about other cool things, we do have, I was just looking at my calendar. We've got Tim Mooney from the Pedal Shift Project. project, and he's from Washington, D.C. I think he is actually in Portland as we record right now. We see him soon. But he does a great show specifically about bicycle touring. So if you have interest around that. And then Kat Caparello from the Joyride podcast, she also does a great show based out of Portland, and she's coming to talk to us soon. So
finally.
Yes.
Our she's hard to get a hold of.
And our people talk.
We've been, we just have.
Yeah, we tried to get a hold of her for this show too, and we couldn't get her.
She's elusive. So,
she's elusive.
Yeah, and that's another option you can have for your podcast is to just be untouchable, like unreachable. That'll push up your scarcity. Fame.
Yeah, we're declining interviews right now. So.
You can only get it on cassette tape.
Yes. So if you were going to give a piece of advice to somebody that wanted to start their own podcast, what would your number one piece of advice be? They're like thinking about it and they kind of have an idea, or they like the idea of having a podcast, but they don't know what to do it about.
Be yourself. I've listened to any number of inaugural podcasts where someone is trying too hard to be something they're not. And it doesn't mean you're a bad person. It just means that you're not finding your niche. And podcasting is all about a niche because everybody has, something that makes them unique and something that makes them exactly who they are. And that's what people want from podcasting. They want to hear a unique perspective. And that's the glory of the podcasting format, is that anybody can make anything and distribute it.
I think that sounds like great advice.
Yeah, sounds good.
And I would also say that what's helped me is just having a buddy to do it with.
That's been super helpful, actually. I think if it was just like me, it would be awful.
But and it also wouldn't be as much fun.
Like people wouldn't listen. But because Abby and I can banter a little bit, it makes it really fun and enjoyable for both of us.
I think with the KBU Bike Show also has numerous co-hosts. I think having other people really helps with ideas of bouncing off each other or building off each other. And having other people makes you maybe a little bit more accountable to make sure it's really going to happen too. That's
absolutely.
Yeah. And or if you're having like a time in your life where you're like, oh, I'm getting married this month and you're not, or whatever, or I'm sick, there's other people to pick up your slack if need be, which is also great to know you have a team to rely on.
And sure. Brock and Aaron, you guys even have guest hosts when you guys go off on vacation. Perish the thought you guys should have to travel out and not be able to do a show. So
no show goes unrecorded.
That's
Is
right.
Is it hard to find guest hosts? Or people jumping at the chance.
Yeah. Well, our friend from Edmonton up there, Glenn Kubish, found a friend and recorded a show in Edmonton that he sent to us, and we posted that. It was 2 years ago now. And
that long ago already.
At the time of recording, we've also got our friend Stefan Guthrie, who are going to step in and do the show at Stream PDX for us next week, because both of us will be gone. So. Yeah, we don't bank up interviews. We did a couple of those banked up where you save something until later and then release it on a schedule. But at a certain point, stuff doesn't feel fresh anymore. And so I like getting it out, as much as possible. But it depends on how much work you want to make for yourself, too. Sometimes it's easier just to have some content and release it on a schedule.
Out of curiosity, what's your turnaround time? Like if you record an episode on a Monday, when do you release it?
12 hours night. Later. Wow. It depends on how much editing needs to be done. We do very little editing. And so, anyone who listens to the show knows that.
That does help shorten things up a bit when you don't have to edit anything.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We're getting better at not having to edit, but if I didn't edit the first couple of shows, you guys...
It would have been 2 hours.
That would have been the end of the show. There would have been zero listeners beyond that.
They're like, never again. Yes. Never again. Am I going to dedicate that much of my life to that?
Exactly.
I do listen to one Cyclocross podcast and they can go on. Like, I think their season ending show is 2.5 hours. Oh. Like Bill Shaikin's Crosshairs. It's still, for a cyclocross nerd as myself, it's still mildly riveting. I mean, I did mess up a baking recipe listening to a cyclocross podcast, so that's super nerdy. I'm sorry.
Speaking of Bill, the network that you created, so Wide Angle Podium, really excited about that. So our show is now up on Wide Angle Podium.
Oh, right on.
And what is Wide Angle Podium?
It's just a network of cycling podcasts.
Oh, are you guys on Wide Angle Podium?
No, but we like them.
Yeah, well,
we're not against them.
Except the 2 hour, 2.5 hour.
Right.
I mean, we had a while where it was like maybe two summers ago, where we would end up with like a 2-hour podcast. And, you know, it was so much energy to try to pare down what we wanted to keep versus, you know, what we could lose, that we just decided, okay, we'll put out a 2-hour podcast or a 2-hour episode.
All go.
Yeah.
Or you can also split it into 1 hour hour. And then you have that backed up.
Two-parter, yeah.
Yeah, then you got, yeah. Let's
keep the listeners, like, wanting more.
That's
like,
right.
To finish that one.
How many parts do you guys think Iverson's trip on the Oregon Outback would take if you broke that down into...
Well, that was like a three-six-hour segment.
That was like... Yeah. That was an epic show.
After editing, we had 3 hours of content released over 3 episodes. Right. So, yeah.
And it was a lot of wind, because it's windy.
A lot of wind.
Tell me about this.
This was their friend's trip on the Oregon Outback. And
which is right across central Oregon from north to south,
right.
Which no longer is being done as really an organized ride, but the route's still there and you could do it. But yeah, we sent them out there. They had grill bikes and whatnot, and we got audio from them as they grilled their way across eastern Oregon.
Well, unfortunately, speaking of editing, we are coming to the end of our time of having you guys on.
I would like to ask Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson how people can find your podcast if they are curious about listening.
So you can, we're on iTunes. You can go to our website, wegottohangout.com.
And that's T-O, not the number 2. That's
yeah,
right.
It's hard to say which we went to in the podcast.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, it's easy now, to say we got to hang out.
Yeah,
but
it's hard to say. It's pretty funny.
As a title, it's harder to
somehow
say.
Somehow we made it awkward.
Yeah.
But you can also find our show on Wide Angle Podium now.
Right.
Exactly.
Nice. Yeah. And Brock.
Yeah.
Brock and Aaron, how do folks find the Sprocket podcast?
TheSprocketPodcast.com. Well, I always point to wherever our media has migrated to. And we're also on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, and I think we're on Google Play. All the major directories, we try to get
all
them in
the
there.
All the big hitters.
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, we're just that big.
But .com, TheSprocketPodcast.com is where you can find us.
Great. Thank you guys for joining us today. You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show from Portland, Oregon, which airs on the first Wednesday of every month. Podcasts are on iTunes, and all past episodes are generously archived at bike.portlandtransport.com. The KBOO Bike Show is produced by Tori Bortman, Alon Robb, and myself, Terry Campbell. We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Ken Jones, our web host, Chris Smith, and today's guests, Annalisa Fish and Abby Watson from We Got to Hang Out podcast, and Aaron Flores and Brock Dittus from the Sprocket podcast. We'll be back next month with more great bike news. Until then, make it a great day and keep spinning those wheels.
Now brush your teeth.
My mother tells me I should stop.
Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of La Inaugurada La Primavera on April 21st and 22nd. Two nights of joy and justice in a multi-venue call to action in response to the immigration ban. On April 21st, La Inaugurada La Primavera features Alex and Allison Gray, Las Cafeteras, and Gran Ritmos, and Ana Vasquez, and Voz Workers' Rights Education Project at the Melody Ballroom. April 22nd at the Crystal Ballroom will feature Alex and Allison Gray, Daca Braca, Future Primitive, The Human Experience, and Orquesta Pacifico Tropical. Again, that's La Inaugurada La Primavera on April 21st and 22nd, two nights of joy and justice in a multi-venue call to action in response to the immigration ban. Venue addresses and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Time for Jazz Lives. Thank you.